Yo me llamo José Luis Gómez, al estilo cubano sería José Luis Gómez Morales.
¿Y de dónde, en qué parte de Cuba nació usted?
Yo nací en Santi Espíritu, Las Villas, cuando aquello, ahora es Santi Espíritu.
¿Y qué? Si no es muy indiscreto, ¿en qué año nació usted?
Yo nací en el año 1949, el 7 de marzo del 49.
Hable un poquito de sus padres, su familia de origen.
Como te dije, nací en Santi Espíritu, mi familia espirituana pura, los dos padres. Mis padres no fueron casados, que era una cosa bien extraña en aquellos tiempos en Cuba, ¿no? En el año, yo nací en el 49, entonces era una cosa bien poco usual que una mujer tuviera un hijo así. Pero mis padres sí tenían, eran una pareja, pero nunca se casaron. Mi papá era alcohólico, mi mamá no quería nada que ver con él por la tomadera de él. Pero por lo que me dicen a mí, porque mi mamá murió cuando yo tenía 9 años y mi relación con mi papá no era muy unida, ¿me entiendes? Era mi papá, yo lo veía, él me veía, pero no, nunca vivimos juntos, no tuvimos ese bonding que se dice. Pero por lo que me dicen a mí, mi papá y mi mamá se querían y se veían prácticamente todos los días y entre los dos me atendían a mí. Pero yo vivía con mi mamá, mi abuelita, a un tío y una tía. Realmente, eso fueron la gente que me criaron a mí. Mi mamá murió cuando yo tenía 9 años. Después de mi mamá morir, yo me quedé en el cuidado de mi abuelita, de mi tía, de mi tío el negro, y una señora que yo le llamo mi madrina, pero ella no fue mi madrina, ella no me bautizó a mí. Ella era muy amiga de mi mamá. Mi mamá trabajaba para ella en la casa de ella, una señora de dinero. Y cuando mi mamá se murió, le pidió a ella que me atendiera a mí, que se hiciera cargo de mí. Y ella fue la que me dio escuela, you know what I mean, todo, ¿me entiendes? O sea que me crié en dos, como si se quiere decir, en dos mundos. Mi familia de sangre muy pobre, esta señora muy rica. So it was like being in two different worlds in there. So.
I just remember we said we're going to do it in English.
Yeah, you can do it. It's okay. Do the rest in English.
Continue in English. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah. So living in these two different worlds, and two worlds, like you said, like your family, your origin family, yeah, was poor, and then living with a woman who was wealthy. What did this mean for you in 1959 when the Castro government took power?
Well, that was, for me, wasn't difficult. I mean, I was a 9-year-old, 10-year-old kid going with the flow. So I enjoy being out there and doing things the revolution way. You know what I mean? I joined I can't remember the name at the time, La Patrulla Juveniles. It was like an organization trying to mimic the Boy Scouts. But it was a revolutionary version of that. So I joined that, and I did revolution since I was a kid. I was 11 years old. I went to do the literacy campaign in the mountains. Part of my family were pro Fidel Castro, part of my family was against Fidel Castro. This lady, Angelina Gomez was her name. Angelina was totally against. She was a very rich woman and she lost all she had. So she wasn't exactly a revolutionary person. The only thing with her is that she never wanted to come to the United States. So, but I grew up, those years I jumped into what was going on at the time. You know what I mean? I went to the campaign, la campaña de alfabetización, I did my thing, I came back down. I was living like on my own, so sort of a revolutionary kid type of life. The two houses where I lived, my house, and my madrina, Angelina's house, I mean, they were against, you know. My grandmother was like, my grandmother was amazing. Because my grandmother, she never missed one speech of Fidel Castro, not even one. She would listen to all of them, but she would criticize all the way from A to Z, you know. And it was really funny because she would go like, este lo que es un mentiroso. Oye, pa' eso, hablando mierda se pasa la vida. Este tipo está del carajo. And she was just totally, you know, like blasting Fidel, you know what I mean? But she wouldn't miss one speech. And then she had this body who will pass by the house every day, and did you listen to Caballo? Yeah, he's crazy, he's a motherfucker, you know what I mean, all that stuff. So that was how I grew up, man. And my friends divided too. A lot of my friends were leaving the country. At the time, that's what was happening in Cuba a lot. I mean, people leaving to come to the United States, people staying and being revolutionary and doing revolution, families kind of not divided in a bad way, but divided ideologically per se. And that was the situation in my family. in sixth, I can't remember exactly when was that that they stopped the coming to the United States in the 60s. I think it was a period in there where the whole thing was stopped. And then they opened up again in a place called Caimaneras, I think it was, in Matanzas, Varadero. Anyhow, when that happened, they were going to send me here. And that happened right after the whole, it was a bola that was going around. You sabe lo que es una bola, you know what I mean?
Rumor.
A rumor going around, and that all the kids were going to be sent to the Soviet Union, and that the brain was going to be washed, and blah, blah, blah. And this lady, Angelina Gomez, she said, well, why don't we send him to the United States? So I got a passport, I got everything. I mean, I was like ready to come. At the time, I would have been like maybe 11, 12 years old, 13 maybe. I was like ready to come. And then I can't remember what happened. I think Caimanera was closed again. And that was what stopped me coming at that time. And then I just continued my life in there, you know, in Santi Espíritu. So that's.
Did Angelina Gomez know that you were involved with Revolution?
Oh, yeah. And she always approved to everything. She was an amazing lady. She loved me a lot. And she didn't interfere as a family. She was there as a support more so because the directions that my mother gave was that she will be the one making decisions. And she said, don't let his father make decisions because he's the drunk, I guess. She will make decisions about whatever I asked for, even going and do the alphabetization, anything that she asked for, you know, she approved. She didn't have any problem with me doing what I did. I mean, going to school, nothing. It was nothing political in between she and me, and in between my family and me, you know what I mean? Not even with my friends. I remember in 67 or something like that, I was already in Havana studying. And I had two very good friends from my hometown. And I went on one weekend, I had a pass from my school. I went to Varadero Beach. We used to do that once in a while. So we went to Varadero with a group of guys. And I ran into this friend of mine. And he said, we're leaving tomorrow. See, they talk about the Balseros now, but the Balseros have been happening since the 60s, and I believe that the people from my hometown were the masters of Balseros. I mean, they just came up with that idea. That la gente de Santi Espíritu came up with that idea, I think. So anyhow, these two guys were leaving, and one of them said, hey, we're going to be leaving tonight at midnight, blah, blah, blah. We're leaving from 27th and so in Varadero, blah, blah. You want to go? Let's jump in. Let's go, blah, blah. And I just was in my, you know, I was playing basketball. I was in Havana, in La Escuela, in El Fajardo. It was a very famous school in Cuba for sports. And I said, well, you guys, you know, good luck. I don't, you know. I tried to go say goodbye there, but they, you know, one of the guys was kind of a skeptical about anybody. He was really... You know, so the other guy met me and said, no, don't get close because so-and-so said no. I said, okay, fine, I'll say goodbye, you know what I mean? I haven't seen this guy ever in my life again. But that happened in 60, I think it was 67 or something like that. But, yeah.
And how did you become involved with the literacy campaign?
It was the thing to do. I mean, it was advertised all over the place. There was a lot of stuff going on around that. And people agree with that. I was a kid, and in the schools they would just say that, and anybody who had a you know, fifth, sixth grade could do that, and that was my age at the time, 11 to 12, you know what I mean? And that was it. All you had to do was to sign up for that thing and say, you know, I want to go and do it. And then if you had the approval of your family, then you just go and do it. That's it. You know, so, yeah.
What do you remember most about that experience?
It's a family, it was kind of a nice experience. I mean, I know that now. As a kid, I was just going with the flow, really. But it was really nice to be out there in the country field. They treated me like another member of the family. It was really good. They really cared a lot about me. I was pulled out after the whole thing with the Conrado Benitez death and all that other thing. All the younger kids were pulled out then. Mm-hmm. After they assassinated Conrado Benitez and all those guys, for the campaign of alphabetization, all the younger kids were pulled out of it. And then they stationed me kind of closer to the town where I didn't have to, you know, but at the beginning I was living with them in their house in the country.
Who were you living with? Do you remember the name?
Yeah, I was the Familia Perez. It was a Familia Perez, that's what I remember. I think the name of the old man was Gumercindo. And I remember he was a very nice guy, very in control of his family, but he was very nice. And the lady, his wife was Estrella. And they had like 10 kids. I can't remember the names of everybody. That song has been way back when, and I was left back in there. But Those two I do remember exactly. They had a couple of kids my age, you know, and everything in between there. There was like 10 kids in the house.
What part of Cuba did they live in?
In El Cambray. You know, that's in between Santo Espíritu, San Trinidad, you know. It wasn't exactly the middle of the Escambray. I wasn't up in the mountains. I was just in a, you know, kind of like, you know, down. This thing with Conrado Benitez happened up in the middle of the Escambray, I believe. So I was a lot closer to, you know, to the town than that, you know.
Was there a name of the region where you live, or a name of a little town?
Yeah, I want to say El Caney, but it's not El Caney. I'm getting confused with some place around my hometown that it was El Caney. That's when I came back. They put me close to a place called El Caney. I can't remember right now. It was a place in between Santo Espíritu and San Trinidad. I'm sure that it's still there. And that place became, I will remember the name of the place, I know. That place became kind of famous, like with the years in there, because they put one of those escuelas al campo there, and then it was a big, I think there is a big dairy place there. Dairy de una vaquería grande, you know, in there. It's a lot of projects that the revolution put in place in that particular place. Banao. Banao, that's the name of the place, Banao. It was like a off Banao, so. A nice place, and I was used to the area because Angelina, she had a place there. She had a lot of land before it was taken from her. She had two different ones, one called Las Cuchillas, another one Los Molinos. We used to go to Las Cuchillas every summer. I would spend three vacations month. You know, May, June, July, August, I will be there in Las Cuchillas. And Banao was like maybe in miles, could have been like maybe 30 miles before Las Cuchillas, something like that, maybe even less than that. So I was kind of familiar with that area there. Also, before I was in La Patrulla Juvenile, before the revolution, I was a Boy Scout. And the Boy Scouts used to go to Banao, like, so it was this hill in there that they used to go for excursiones, and this, my school also used to go there. So I was kind of familiar with the area, actually. Kind of a pretty, you know, pueblo campesino, you know what I mean, in between Trinidad and Santo Espíritu. So.
You were saying something about Conrado Benitez and something happened. What happened?
Well, during the la campaña de alfabetización, the Contras, you know, were in the mountains. Since the campaña de alfabetización started being a success, I guess in order to do something and to intimidate, they went after us, the kids who were alphabetizing, you know what I mean, or doing the literacy thing. And Conrado Benitez was somebody who got killed there. They captured him and they hung him. It was a horrible murder, really. I mean, it was like two or three of them, and he was one of them. And he was the most famous one. It was really brutal what they did with this guy. They took the, you know, the wire that used on fences with the little spikes in it, and they hang him with that thing after torturing the guy. And I said, really? And this was like a 14, 16 years old guy. He wasn't like a, you know, he was just doing something up there to help these people. So that was horrible. And actually, the brigadas took his name, Brigada Conrado Benitez, after that happened. In the literacy thing, the brigadas took their name, Brigada Conrado Benitez. And he was one of the very first. So, you got to think of, I think it was a whole year or 2 years or something with that campaign in there. So the first group of people were the older ones. And then once things started going, they took the younger ones and then younger ones. That's when I went in. And he was killing the very first one. So La Brigada Conrado Benitez, that was the name of it. And then they named it after his death. So it was a horrible thing.
Didn't you feel scared after that?
You know what? I was a kid. And it wasn't after that. That was before. I guess I got it kind of confused. As I was saying, the first draft to go, draft is not the right word. The first group of people going there, or kids going there, were like older kids. And that's when he went. I went on the last one. So I think I said it backwards before, but it didn't happen at the same time. But it was not a thing. Maybe it was a thing for my family. I don't know. They never said anything because they let me do it. Maybe it was a thing for them. I don't know.
But you don't remember suddenly thinking, do you remember feeling?
Not me.
Did you feel like you were in danger?
No. No, this family was very protective. I mean, and it was very safe. They were not up in the mountains where all this fighting was going on. They were not way up there. you know, it was more like bajo para abajo para el llano, or closer to this banal place. So, you know, I don't remember saying, oh my God, something's gonna happen to me or anything like that. Maybe being young, being a kid, and going with the flow, I don't know.
It was also, I think, during around the same time, it was all in 1961. So it's same year in 1961 in the springtime, the Bay of Pigs invasion.
Yes,
happened.
That happened too. Yeah, it was all that was happening. It was a very, exciting time. Really, it was really a crazy, exciting time. So sometimes I kind of sit back and think about it. I say, man, I've been part of a piece of history there that is really interesting. All this stuff that was going on. You know what I mean? La contrarrevolución. I have friends whose parents were really top-notch contrarrevolucionarios en las montañas. You know, I mean, it was amazing. It's amazing. The amount of events was really amazing. I remember I think it was around Bay of Pigs. It was after the revolution, maybe 60, 61, somewhere in there. I remember people still getting killed. And all the, you know, the funeral services in town and all that was going on. So it's a really interesting period of time in there, really. And as a kid, before the revolution, which is kind of funny because my little block in there was a funny block. You know, it was very mixed with all those sentiments. And some people were, you know, pro Fidel Castro, some people were against Fidel Castro, some people were in the middle and all that. And I remember as a kid, the people listening to Radio Rebelde, and then they use those keys to kind of like as lookouts, and because that was not allowed, and then the police would come by and we'd just whistle, and then they stop. I mean, we were just kids. I was not trying to do revolution. We just being part of something. Right there in the corner of my house was a kind of a historical place, really. If you think about it this way, it was called El Gremio Tabacalero. And a gremio was a place for, it's like a union headquarters. That's what a gremio is, or used to be in Cuba. So this was the headquarters for the union of the tabacaleros. And in there, they had these strikes that were heavy, heavy, heavy duty. I mean, and I remember as a kid just looking at the people, you know, in there, in the barricades and the police, and they throwing, you know, bottles at the police and the whole thing. I mean, vague memories, but I still remember stuff like that. And then at the very beginning, towards the end of the struggle, the end of the fight there, we used to participate. They used us as kids, really, you know what I mean, to throw bottles, to throw nails on the floor. We used to bring all the chairs of the park, El Parque de la Caridad. We used to bring all the chairs to the park and block the streets with that under the direction of somebody who was trying to be a revolutionary but didn't have a rifle. He was trying to do something. You know, it was a kid fun thing to do, but at the same time, it was just part of the whole thing there. So.
And back to the literacy campaign, did you guys get training? Like, how did you?
No. The only thing that it was at the time is that you just had to be on fifth, sixth grade. So you knew how to read and write, really, and then be able to teach somebody. So we didn't have a big training. They would give you one of those Emerson lamps, you know, a notebook and a pencil, and just go and do your thing, you know. So that was it. That was it. I don't remember anything where you would go and get prepared how to teach people or be a teacher or anything. It wasn't even about being a teacher. It was about just helping somebody else, I think. You know, just to make them understand, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you know, that's it, and write their name and be able to sign. That was the main objective, to have some, it was the beginning of some sort of a cultural movement, I would say, you know what I mean, to get everybody in Cuba to be able to read and write. That was the first campaign, you know, everybody be able to read and write. Then after that, they continue going with everybody to get the sixth grade and everybody to get this and everybody to get that. But the very beginning, everybody had to learn how to know how to read and write. That was the very beginning of it. So.
And the people you taught, when you first got to their houses, did they?
They were expecting us and they were ready for us because they knew somebody was going to be assigning there. Whatever type of organization the country had going at the time, they would know you're going to have somebody stationed here doing the thing, and this is the name of the person, and this is the family name, and this is the person where he lives, and so they were ready to kind of like take you in as part of their family. That's what they did. And they fed you, they gave you everything that you needed as far as to survive, and then you would have your little time to play. I used to play a lot with the kids that were my age in there. you know, go out hunting and doing a lot of stuff in there. So it was like a kid, nice kid thing to do. Really, it wasn't that serious like it sounds like, oh my God, you know, 11 years old teacher. It wasn't even about that. It was like, you know, we're going with the flow and then you're having fun with the same at the same time. You know?
How old were you at the time?
I was 11, 12 years old at the time. But this is like 60, I think it was 61. And I was 9.
Move your head
so
to
I
the
was
right.
11. 11 years old. 11 to 12 years old. So.
And. How did you get up there? Did I stop blocking that?
Just a little bit.
Sorry,
just a little bit.
Can I ask him to say it again?
Yeah, if you want.
Yeah. Could you just say talk again about how old you were at the time?
Oh, I was 11 years old. Because Revolution was, you know, I was 9 in 59, 10, 11, 61. So I was 11 years old. And I was in between the 5th and 6th grade somewhere in that. That was the requirement, kind of. As far as I remember, you know what I mean? And as I said, that was the last... I don't know if it was the last. It was one of the last groups of people going out there. You know, it was at the end of it. So.
And how did you get up to the house of the people?
Oh, they took you there. You know, they took you there. Actually, it was in El Gremio right there. They would pick. You know, they had a different places in town, but you just go in the little buses or camiones or whatever they had, and they took you to that place. And then every time that you would get a pass to go to your house, they would pick you up. And then they bring you back, or your family will go pick you up, or whatever the situation may be. Yeah.
So you didn't have to walk?
No.
In my
case, I didn't have to walk far. I'm sure that some people had to grab the little, you know, farol lampara and go up the mountains. I'm sure somebody had to do that because the thing was done in the middle of the Sierra Maestra and all. You know, it was going to the really deep inside the country in Cuba, so I'm sure that some people had to do that. The older guys at the beginning had to do that stuff, going up there. And I don't know for a fact if everybody got the literacy. I doubt it, you know, but I think a big, you know, it's a huge effort, and it was a good effort at the same time.
And the people that you went to teach, were they totally illiterate people?
Yeah. The heads of the family, the wife and they didn't have no a clue of what was going on. And the kids was already going to school because you had to already revolution is going on. So the younger people were already going, you know. So they were doing their own thing besides, you know.
So say that, say it like that. Say the adults were illiterate, they didn't know
yeah,
anything.
Yeah, the adult people were illiterate, all of them. But the younger ones, the ones my age, they were already going to school. But the older ones in the house, the heads of the family, they were not. That's the people that I was working with. And I think it was a couple of the brothers that were just working and they never had a schooling.
And how old do you think they were?
They could, oh God, that's a hard one because, yeah, I don't know. I may have to just try to look at them now. I'm trying to just, you know, be accurate, but just have an idea because as a kid to me, like where they were old people, you know what I mean, with 10 kids, you know what I mean? But maybe if I look at them now, they could have been in the late 30s, you know, somewhere in their 40s, something like that maybe.
What did they ask you to teach them?
No, they didn't ask anything. They didn't ask anything. They were just voluntarily, I would say that, you know, willing to learn. And we had, you know, we had what we were supposed to be doing. We had what is called a cartilla those days, which was a little manual that it had, you know, the A, B, C, A, E, U, you know, thing, and then the little things that you would do with them. They didn't ask anything. You know, they would just be there every night. And every night you sit down after you eat, you sat down on the table and you taught them how to write an A and how to write an E and how to read from A to E and what this, you know, and all that. So. Looking at it right now, in most of the cases, it was like a jump start, really, for some people. As I said, so they could at least write the name. He wasn't aiming at getting people there to read the newspaper at the time. You know, it's at least to get acquainted with how the alphabet is and to get to sign the names for whatever they had to do. And as I remember, that was one of the tasks, just to teach them how to write the name.
Did they know the alphabet before?
No, the older people didn't. The younger ones that weren't there, they were two brothers, they kind of had an idea. But the older ones, they never, you know, they knew how to count though. That they knew how to do. I would say it was kind of interesting. I guess it had to do with the thing of money and stuff like that. You know, I mean, they knew how to count very good. You know, they knew how to count their money. That's a fact, you know, so, you know.
Was it hard for them to learn how to make the letters?
No, not really. Not really. I guess maybe in some cases it could be harder if the people were older because of the ability, the coordination, but not really. I mean, this little manual that we have called La Cartilla has all the exercises how to kind of like train the hand to do the little O's and to do the little, you know, sticks and stuff like that. So it had everything for calligraphy in it. So it kind of was, as I said, it's a jump start for people to kind of get into, hey, it's important for us to know how to read and write.
And when they learn to write their names?
Happy as hell. Because most, you got to think about this, like most of the time these people would, when they had to sign anything with the people who were the owners before anything, they would just do crosses and stuff like that. They'd do fingerprinting and it was a big effort at the time educating the farmers and the campesinos about how much they were had before because they didn't know how to read and write. So that was the whole objective for the whole thing. So they had an idea when they had a paper in front of them, what am I signing here? And how to sign, you know what I mean? Because a lot of times people lost land, people lost cattle, people lost a lot of stuff, from what I heard, because they didn't know how. Anybody could show with a piece of paper and tuck them into, putting a couple of crosses and that was it. You know, it was really, a lot of that happened before. So, yeah, so that was the objective of it. It's like a jump start for people to, you know, looking at it right now, you know what I mean? Back then you thought you did a wonderful thing. I taught them how to do, you know what I mean? But you didn't, it was just like, you know, the beginning of something, so.
And what about when you left? Do you remember when it was time for you to leave? Was it difficult to leave?
No, because we used to go weekends, go home, and that's what was happening. At the same time, I remember when the first group of people came back, how they were received, and so you were looking at, you know, how that popularity type of thing too. And for the older people, they had a lot of scholarships at the beginning, based on if you went to do the thing, you will get a beca to go and study this and study that. So it was something that was a rewarding thing to come back because you knew you were gonna be received and people were waiting, all the parents were waiting and, you know, the camion is coming back and you have your mochila and your thing and, you know, just a little bit of popularity kind of, you know. So no, it was exciting to go back. Yeah.
There was a big march, I think, at the end.
Yeah, it was a big demonstration in Havana at the very end of it. Huge demonstration, you know, and I didn't go to any of that. I mean, the older people went. I remember having one of my cousins, she was there from the very beginning, and she went to all that thing, and she went to school too after that. She got one of the scholarships and stuff like that. But she stayed the whole year, the length of the whole thing, you know. I didn't. My thing was, a couple of 3 months in there. So.
In any case, when you think back about your life and you think that, you know, you really were part of helping some people like learn to write their names for the first time. I don't know, how do you feel?
Not right now, very good. I mean, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that. I mean, a lot of people don't know the things about me, you know, because it's something that is just way back in the past there. And, I mean, I'm proud of that I did that. I'm proud that I went to pick up cotton, and I'm proud that I did the coffee thing in the Cordon de La Habana, and I went to like 4 Zafras Azucareras, you know. I went to Havana to study in 66, and from 66 to 1970, I did like 5 actually. I was there cutting cane in the famosa Zafra de los 10 Millones, you know what I mean? So, and I took it, you know, so I did all that, you know what I mean? I did a whole, I believe that my generation really did revolutionize. The generation before mine, they did the fighting and the struggle. And I do believe that my generation, we did the revolution, really. I mean, I'm not saying that as a super, but I think we did. I mean, because after the struggle, you know, the people my age, you know, the people who were in the, you know, teenagers, when, you know, in the 60s, that's how the whole thing started going on with the younger people, with the direction of the older ones. But, you know, as I said, I cut cane, I did the coffee thing, harvest coffee, I pick up cotton, I, you know, all that stuff. included in all those years in there. Every campaign, everything that I was there to do, you know, we were part of it. Especially you went to study like I did. I went to one of the becas. I went to one who was called Comandante Manuel Fajardo, that it was sports. That's what I used to do in Cuba. So I went to El Fajardo. It was one of the most famous ones in Cuba. And so if you went to one of those becas, you will be doing a whole bunch of that stuff. You know what I mean? Los domingos going to the Cordón de La Habana a sembrar café, you know what I mean? And in the summertime or before summertime, maybe, you better believe you're going to be cutting some cane, you know, and be part of La Zafra Azucarera and all that other thing there, you know.
So, and then you went to Africa. What were you doing in Africa?
I went to Africa after I graduated. I graduated from my school in 1970, 71. And I went to work in Santi Espíritus for a second there. Then I went to the capital of the province, Santa Clara. And I was stationed in Santa Clara for, you know, till 78. I worked in there. And I can't believe, I don't remember exactly, but it could have been like 75, 76, somewhere in there. People will sign up, agreeing to be called as an internationalist, if needed. And so sometimes when you talk about internationalism here, they think it's about fighting and all that, but it wasn't any of that. I mean, that was part of it, but it was a huge amount of people that we went there to help with other things. So I went to, in 78, I got the call. Actually, the first time in 76. But in the 78 was the big one. In 78, I went to Guinea-Bissau with a mission. It was called Misiones. It's on the mission that we had was for sports. And we went there to help them to get together their physical education program for the year. It was five guys, one guy in basketball, that was me, another guy in volleyball, another guy baseball, another guy track and field, and another guy was the head of the mission, who will help with one thing or the other. And so we kind of signed up or agreed on being there for a year in Guinea-Bissau, doing that. And that's what we did. I mean, and it was really, you know, it was something else too. I mean, it's a same thing, helping somebody else, kind of the same concept. While being in there, I was one of the lucky ones because of the sport thing. I used to work with, besides working with the schools, I had like a sidekick in there that I would, I was training or coaching the national women's team of Guinea-Bissau. They didn't have one really like a super, they had like, you know, five, six women who play basketball, and then the military in there called the national team. There's a couple of competitions, one in Guinea-Conakry, another one in Angola, and I got to travel to those two countries too. In those competitions, so that was it. I was the whole year became 15 months. I believe it was 15 months at the end. How long I stayed, and then I went back to Cuba. And that's where I met my ex-wife, Medea, in Africa. So that was fun too.
And this city where you live now, this what we see behind
San Francisco. Yeah. I like this. I like it. I mean, it is funny because when I came here, I ended up in here not because of political reasons or anything like that. I ended up in here because I had the opportunity. Being married to a North American woman in Cuba after the Mariel boat lift, they had this new kind of law where everybody who was married to a foreigner could travel to that country with the, you know, after going to immigration and all that thing. So a friend of ours went to England, and at the time Medea was having a little bit of a struggle in Cuba. You know, she was having a hard time really in Cuba. And we were talking before, hey, maybe we can go for a year. She's already kind of tired of doing the same thing, and then, you know Medea, she's somebody who wants to be doing something, something exciting. And so she was a little bit, I guess, tired of what she was doing, maybe. I don't know, I'm speaking on her behalf, I don't know this, but maybe a little bit overwhelmed, what she was, not overwhelmed, but bored with what she was doing. And she had on the side this sort of thing that she used to write for she used to write articles for the New York Guardian. And at the time in Cuba, I remember in that particular year that Cuba opened up for the farmer's market. It was the first idea of the farmer's market in Cuba. And she was interviewing people in the farmer's market to take to the New York Guardian with the news, oh, Cuba has a farmer's market, blah, blah, you know. Anyhow, to make it short, she ended up in trouble because of that thing. Because at the same day that she interviewed a particular guy, She was traveling to the United States 1 or 2 days after that. She interviews this guy. The following day, they did one of those ofensivas revolucionarias, and they closed up the farmer's market and blah, blah, blah. So when she gets to the airport, she's leaving with this interview that she did, these papers, and they said, you can't take this out of here and left it there. So she could go, but not the papers. And when she came back, blah, blah, they knock at our door, you know what I mean? And we have to go to Villa Marita. Villa Marita was one of these places for the seguridad del Estado. I was really pissed off because I was somebody, I was in that Juventud Comunista. I mean, I was like really, I don't think I had it coming. So that's the only thing politically that I guess that kind of like said, you know. And then after that, the place where I was working, people used to travel, and I believe, I'm not quite sure of this, but I believe that a couple of opportunities that I had to travel to go with the basketball team, you know, the youth basketball team, that I was cut down because of that. I was married to North American, all that BS, you know what I mean? So that was like, you know, the icing on the cake. And then Medea got in trouble for that. She gets fired from Grandma. She was working in Grandma. We lost the housing. You know, we had to start hustling. We hustled all the way to buy an apartment in Havana, yeah, and we did, you know what I mean, selling grabadoras and jeans and stuff like that. So we hustled our way into getting a place. We got our place. And then eventually, as I said, she didn't have really a job, and she had interest in doing other things. I mean,
when did you come here?
I came here, we left Cuba the December 17th of 1982. I will never forget the date, not the hour. So, staying in between Florida and New York, stayed for a period of time. We ended up here in San Francisco in January 9th of 83.
And
I've been here since.
And you still feel Cuban? What is it?
Oh, yeah. I'm extremely Cuban. I mean, I'm totally attached to my community here. Since I came in here, I got involved in cultural stuff. I mean, in Cuba, I used to like folklore a lot when I was in there. I was not a musician in Cuba or anything like that, but I used to hang around. I have friends who are musicians. I used to go to El Sábado de la Rumba in Havana. So I like rumbas a lot, and I like all that folklore stuff. So when I came here, I found a folklore group in here with a couple of Cubans in there, and I joined in. So I've been always on the side involved with that aspect of the Cuban, our culture, you know what I mean, playing music, doing Cuban folklore. I don't do it as a living. I don't live off it for the jobs and stuff. But, you know, I've always been involved. Most of my friends in here are Cubans. It's not a big community here in the Bay Area, but it's a community. And we do things together. You know, we do rumbas in houses, and we celebrate birthdays Cuban style. And we do Noche Buenas at Fito's house and have the pernil de puerco con arroz con grillo, you know what I mean, and hang out and play dominoes. And sing some Cuban music and stuff like that. So yeah, I feel extremely Cuban. Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Chévere.